Welcome to the LarryandFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Lannan. Fishers will be the first place in Indiana to have an Internet of Things, or IoT, lab. It's set to open March 21st. John Wexler, the founder of Launch Fisher and one of the major people behind the IoT lab, talks about that and Launch Fishers as we talked during the afternoon of Thursday, February 8th. I'm at Launch Fishers, and I'm very happy to welcome once again to our podcast series John Wexler, the founder of Launch Fishers, now involved with the Fishers Internet of Things Lab. And John, so much has happened with you and Fishers and Launch and IoT. We have a lot to talk about since last time you and I got together.
Looking forward to it, Larry. Thank you for having me, and welcome back to Launch Fishers.
Well, I was just here yesterday, in fact. Lindsay Ardotti and I did a podcast. Sad to say, she's leaving the north of 96th beat, and IBJ had a reporter, but they've switched things around again, so I think we'll find out in a few weeks who will be taking that.
Yeah,
beat.
We will miss Lindsay, and hopefully you guys can manage to stay a little bit connected so that you can continue your good work. I've enjoyed listening to your joint podcast as well as your regulars.
And I think I've helped train her. I think IBJ is doing a series of podcasts here very soon. They're going to start that. And Lindsay's covering the Statehouse, and there are plenty of Statehouse issues
Absolutely.
That impact Fishers. We know Scott Fadness is very involved with the Cities and Towns Association called AIM now. So, I think that Lindsay and I may hook up together. We made that promise. So
you guys are a good team.
We'll try it again. I may have to haul downtown. So that's where she lives and works now. All but right. We're here to talk about a number of things, John. And I want to talk about Launch Fishers, where it's going and how you've expanded that. But before I do that, I really want to start off with the Internet of Things. First time I really got to know the Internet of Things is a very good friend of mine who's in the tech business and writes offer websites at a very high-tech level. I read one of his pieces he wrote, and I thought, I have no idea what this man's talking about. But he can also write very specific types of pieces that are for a broader audience. But my point is, he knows his stuff on tech. And his point was, Internet of Things is this big thing. How do you explain Internet of Things to someone who really doesn't know what it is? I've heard various explanations of it. The most simple one that I have heard is that you just connect everything. You could connect the shirt that you're wearing. You could connect the painting in your house to this large network. So is Internet of Things just this almost perfect connectivity of everything you can imagine?
It's pretty much that, right? Yeah. The Internet of Everything. So if you imagine your thermostat today that is connected to a network, let's say, and has some intelligence built into it, so room to room, it can work. The thermostats can work together to manage your home, or cameras, or garage door openers, or front door locks, or cars that drive themselves, or you name it. All of those rely on technologies, the underlying technology of which is referred to as Internet of Things. Looks basically at machine-to-machine communication and then machine-to-human. So you can use an app to then dial into something to control it or sense what's going on around you.
Now, what I have seen is that already in the commercial industrial realm, Internet of Things has been used for a long time. You can see it in your grocery store, these big box stores. They track every piece of inventory. It's got a chip in it. They know where it is. They know what their inventory is real time, not just to the day, but to the minute and the second. So the reason I'm mentioning this is because the Internet of Things lab is coming to Fishers, the first in the state of Indiana. And from what I understand, there are not very many of them anywhere. And John McDonald, in a conversation I had with him some months ago, said he thinks this may be the first Internet of Things lab of its kind anywhere.
Definitely as a public-private partnership, we have not seen much like this as we've kind of poked around. I love John McDonald's quote. He calls this the biggest thing since anything. When you look at what IoT is going to do to transform not only our lives, but the key industries here in the state of Indiana. If you look at our history as a manufacturing state, a distribution state, and an agriculture state, those are significant industries in our economy. And IoT is going to radically transform those industries over the coming decades. And this is really a call to action on we're trying to spread the word that, look, we need to we need to innovate, and we need to be prepared for this next wave of IoT connectedness.
And for those who don't know, John McDonald is the founder and CEO of ClearObject, which is a high-tech company located in downtown Fishers and has been recognized as one of the fastest-growing tech companies anywhere, even nationally.
Yeah, they've built an amazing systems integration business around IoT. If you look at their customer list, it's literally a who's who of commerce in America and worldwide.
So, you know, that's part of the team. And when the IoT lab was announced here at Launch Fishers, by the way, I do recall that the governor was here, John McDonald was here, and about 100 other of your close personal friends.
Yes.
It was a big party, and it was a big celebration. And the reason the governor was here is because it's the first in the state. So here's the question I have for you, because here's the question I get from people when I get into a conversation about this Internet of Things lab. What will the Internet of Things lab do? What will people be doing in this lab? What's going to be happening there?
Well, and so much in the way Launch Fishers has really been a convening space for entrepreneurs and innovators, the same is going to happen at the IoT lab. So first and foremost, it's a place to gather this critical mass of talent around IoT. So they can do their work in the same area. That way, if you need a Bluetooth expert, or if you need an AR, VR specialist, or you need a design resource or a development resource, it's all right in the same spot, and it's all focused on IoT. Second thing that we're going to do is bring economies of scale to the tools of the trade, right? If you're a small shop, let's say you're a one-person operation, and you need access to a laser cutter. That's not the kind of thing that you're going to go out and buy and stick in your garage, as much as a lot of us would probably love to do that. It's not feasible. But by having a collection of right now about 50 or so entrepreneurs and innovators in the IoT space, we now have the critical mass of users of that piece of equipment so that it can be amortized across a number of different people that are paying a monthly fee. This is just like the YMCA, right? You wouldn't go buy that nice $5,000 treadmill to stick in your basement, but you'll pay a monthly fee to go in and use that for an hour, hopefully every day. If not every so often, you'll get in and use that piece of equipment. That's the way the IoT will serve our members, the IoT lab.
So what this, and you touched on this before, why this is different than other IoT, because IoT labs normally are private corporations. They're trying to develop this for their own commercial purposes and obviously to develop their own products. But here, what always struck me about this is it wasn't just the state, it wasn't just the city, it wasn't even just Launch Fishers. We had all kinds of private sector people there, but we had Indiana University there. And I think the key that you mentioned, let me talk about this for a minute, how you brought all these different, I guess the word is stakeholders we use, that's kind of a buzzword. What you're saying is you get all these different entities that are going to work together, and you get the kind of information and knowledge that a university can bring to the table and also take away. Why that kind of information, and why that type of working together is so important to make this work in a way that others may not be able to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point. And to me, the insight here, or the aha moment, is this is as much art as it is science. You know, this isn't about getting a list of the 10 things, companies that do this thing or that thing. This is about understanding what these enterprises are really focused on at their core. You know, and so when you look at a company like ClearObject or Outside Source that are in resident members in our IoT lab, we have a bunch of suites that are now rented out, completely rented. We're making space for other members. But when you understand where they fit into the IoT ecosystem, and then organizations like Indiana University, like Comcast, like Allegion, right, we're able to pull them in to the discussion. And we get to the point where everybody says, oh, yeah, I see how that can fit together. And so it is a little bit of art and a little bit of science. And this alchemy that's coming together, I think, is going to create a wonderful ecosystem for IoT entrepreneurs and innovators. One interesting thing, Larry, is that we've seen a lot of interest from our corporate innovation community. So the larger companies are reaching out to us. And these are name brand companies that all of us would recognize, and I best not name any of them right now, because these are all obviously companies that are trying to reach a competitive advantage by looking at that next level of technology. But the idea that they're reaching out to us and not a, you know, a major consulting company or, you know, any other place, they're coming right to us and saying, is there somebody here that can help us with X, Y, or Z?
And it's because you have all that in one place? Is that the reason why?
Yes. And I think that they're hearing about this, right? So the word is getting out. And you mentioned earlier the industrial IoT. That is actually a substantially larger marketplace than the consumer marketplace. So we all see the headlines of internet connected everythings, but the reality is the shop floor, the plant floor, logistics, you know, PLCs that are running factories today with humans involved, but robotics, all of that is internet connected now. And you throw on top of that big data, you know, analytics, cybersecurity, and you are into an absolutely monstrous marketplace that's measured in the trillions, by the way, of dollars.
You brought up something I want to explore, because you just talked about the industrial and commercial aspects of Internet of Things. But when, again, I'm no expert, so you read the experts and try to learn. And when I read the experts and listen to them, what I am hearing, I want you to discuss this, since Internet of Things is now part of Fisher's. The idea is, okay, we've really done well and continue to work on the commercial industrial aspect of Internet of Things. But is there a limit or maybe a ceiling on what consumers really want? For instance, do I really want my shirt connected to the Internet? Do I want my painting frame to be connected to the Internet? I mean, I could understand the thermostat there, but what I'm hearing is you can find 5, 6, 7 things, and when you get to the 12th or 14th or 15th thing, is that something people really want? Or on the other side of the coin, are people going to be creeped out by the fact that everything is so connected that it's scaring them a little bit? Talk about that side of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting social discussion as much as a technology discussion, I think. When you look at the next generation, let's say, you look at the beyond the millennials, right? You look at my age of daughter, right, that's a seventh grader. And, you know, her expectations of the world are very different than what you and I think. And she, quite frankly, isn't that freaked out about connected things and privacy, for that matter, means something very different to, you know, seventh graders today than what it means to maybe us. And so what I think we're going to find is social norms will continue to adapt as the technology advances. The reality is you very much might want your shirt connected when you realize that it might save you from having a stroke, because the technology's there today to add active compression to on-body garments and move blood around your body based on maybe what you need to have happen. Imagine if you put biosensors and take biofeedback from what's going on in your body, and your clothing adapts to help make sure that you don't suffer from a deep vein thrombosis when you're on a flight. Maybe you want your pants to be connected. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's something to think about.
When I think about that, it freaks me out. But you and I were just talking before we started recording that we never thought we would have high-power computers in our pockets and in a cell phone, which has more computing capacity than the moon landing had, which I never expected that to happen. You know, I was a kid watching Star Trek as a kid, and the first time, first run, not to get reruns, and you saw those little communicators. They would have a man from Uncle, but they had the pens that could talk to anybody around the world.
Yeah.
I have lived to see the essential pen, which or the size of a pen, and it can happen. So when you talk about actually monitoring your body functions and warning you about a possible health issue because of the shirt that you're wearing that's connected that can give you this warning, maybe it isn't so crazy anymore.
I think that we're going to see things change very rapidly. I mean, really, the iPhone has just it's about a decade old. And, you know, the idea that we're carrying around, you know, cameras that are better than anything we could have ever imagined maybe when we were growing up, and now everyone has a phone with a camera that's as powerful as anything we could have carried a decade ago, you know, I think our expectations will continue to evolve as technology presents itself. And there are going to be things, by the way, Larry, that we can't even imagine a decade from now.
Oh, I do agree. How could I have imagined some of the things we have today? I never could have imagined the kind. I worked in radio for years that I could have a podcast. I could get out to people all, and I have people all over the world that listen to these podcasts.
Yeah.
I could look at my analytics. Why does somebody in Tokyo listen to this? I have no idea.
But big in Tokyo. I love it.
Not big. I got one person listening. But why is that one person listening? Maybe it's an American, somebody from Fisher's out there in Tokyo.
Well, you know, think about this from a business perspective, sure. How things have changed. Imagine if even, you know, 10 years ago, we had forecasted and kind of looked ahead and said, the largest purveyor of rooms in the world will not own any buildings. And the largest giver of rides in the world will not own any vehicles. Right. If you start thinking about the largest retailer won't have any stores. I mean, it's really changed. When you take those few industries, you take Apple, Amazon, and Google, and they have $500 billion on their balance sheet right now. So that's $500 billion that can be invested in innovation and technology. So, I mean, we're just getting started with this. I really think it's going to be exciting over the next decade, and I think IoT is kind of at the leading edge of this innovation curve.
And what, you know, I think there's also that question, that social thing you talked about what is the corporate responsibility to the rest of society? You know, we've seen Facebook get very involved in these kind of things. So, I mean, tech companies have done very well, but, you know, you wonder how that's going to evolve. Over all these things are just unknown.
Well, and this unknown, right, of social entrepreneurship, right? That wasn't even a thing, you know, until really the technology industry had exploded and created the wealth and the opportunities for these entrepreneurs to factor in social good with their enterprise. So, you know, I just think we're going to see a lot of things change in the coming decade or so.
One last question about the IoT lab in Fisher's. Where do you think it's going to go? You're starting with this. It's already full, so you have no more space to rent. You had already planned a kickoff in March to open it up. You've had media people from every media outlet in town already in here to talk to you in the last month about the Internet of Things Lab. People can't wait to hear about it. So where do you think you are now, and where is that whole thing going?
Well, so to qualify our fullness, all of the suites are leased. We still have room for the backpack entrepreneur.
So you're nearly full.
Yeah, and we have lots of open space that we can create spaces for small work groups and companies. So all of the physical offices are leased out. We probably have room to accept another 100, 150 entrepreneurs. And again, it's like the gym club, right? Not everybody shows up every day to use the same device. And so that allows us to spread that asset across a greater number of users. That's the value add that these places bring to entrepreneurs. In terms of where we go from here, I think this corporate innovation theme will continue to be played out here. We're going to see large, you know, Fortune 2000 type companies that come to the table with product ideas, with R&D or skunkworks projects that, if you look at the innovator's dilemma and Clayton Christensen's point on how hard it is for companies to innovate, it's really, really hard for a company with a sacred cow to drag that cow into the middle of the shop and say, okay, how are we going to dismantle this and attack this industry going forward? But that company should most assuredly understand that all of their competitors are doing that. So the innovation model that makes a ton of sense would be similar to what Microsoft did with Xbox, right? They spun that out, got it as far away from the Microsoft core team as they could. Otherwise, it probably would have had a keyboard and probably, you know, we'd be doing three-fingered salutes and blue screens of death on our Xboxes. Now, it does have Microsoft's operating system today,
sure.
But that business was launched outside of Microsoft, but wholly owned. That gave them a chance to own that industry. They could have ignored it, or they could have tried to do it in-house, and it would have been done differently and might not as successfully been executed as what they ended up doing. So I think we'll see companies that bring projects to the IoT lab and places like this to do innovation outside of their corporate influence.
You know, you just mentioned something that struck me, because the bigger the company, the bigger the beer, and the bigger the company gets, the more bureaucratic it becomes. It's just the nature of things. Harder to innovate in a situation like that. But yet, when you separate it, and when I think of that, even in the military, think of an entity like DARPA. You know, DARPA is part of government. It is part of the military. One of the biggest bureaucracies ever invented was the Defense Department. Yet, somebody had the sense to take DARPA and say, okay, you've got your own little shop over here. If it hadn't been for DARPA, we wouldn't have the internet. We wouldn't have a lot of technology mm-hmm. that we have today. And the reason we have a military advantage in the world is because we have people at DARPA who keep us technologically one step ahead of our competitors.
Absolutely. And you look at where that technology is then exploited into commercial advantage, right? That drives an awful lot of innovation in the commercial economy, and it's put to use in ways maybe that aren't military, but help drive job creation throughout our country.
And GPS was a military application that was opened up for civilian use.
Absolutely.
Which that came out of government, came out of DARPA as well eventually.
Yeah.
Originally. So I guess the point we're making here is that this gives large companies a chance to branch out and do something creative and innovative where it might be more difficult to do it within their own operation, the core operation.
And also, it's relatively low risk for their brand, mm-hmm. right? If you look at a situation where a company's trying to do something different or unique, it's really hard for them to put their brand at risk by experimenting either inside or their company or with existing customers. But if they can take a Skunkworks project out to a place like the IoT lab, they're free to innovate without regard to how it's going to impact their brand today. They'll figure out how they match all that together. But it's most important to understand what customers want, meet that need, and then figure out where it fits into your overall existing brand portfolio.
Now, some people are not going to know what a Skunkworks project is. Tell them what it is.
Well, I guess it does go back to the military days, but I mean, they're, back to the Manhattan Project probably is the biggest Skunkworks project ever created. And that was basically where you take a team, and in corporate America, it happens all the time, and you get them off-site, you get them away from your existing infrastructure and operations, and you give them a task to solve something. Usually, it's a really big idea. And so, there are all kinds of enterprises that are built out of projects like this. And it's Jeff Bezos, I think, says it best when he says, failure and innovation are inextricably tied, right? I mean, they're twins. And you can't innovate unless you're willing to accept failure. And in my estimation, a really good way to innovate and expect failure, right, is to do it away from your existing operation. Do it in a place where it's low risk. But if you don't fail, then by definition, you're almost not innovating because you already know the answers, right? If you're asking questions that you already know the answers to, you're not innovating. You have to be willing to ask a question that you don't know the answer to, run some experiments with products and tests with customers or prospects, and then, a lot of times you end up failing. You repeat, you do it again, you pivot your way into the market opportunity. But we think we have a place for corporate innovators as well as backpacking an idea entrepreneurs to do their thing.
Having attended your Fail Fest, I think what I learned from that is that, yes, failure can happen, but you learn from failure and you move on. That's a big part of why you have to be willing to fail, learn, move on, and then you go somewhere you want to go.
Absolutely. You learn from your failures and you learn from the failures of people around you. Mm-hmm. I think it's an important part of the equation.
Well, I want to talk about something else because I mentioned John McDonald. I had a podcast with him that Lindsay Herdati helped me with several months ago, and he gave you quite a compliment because he said that, there's a lot of co-working space everywhere, and sometimes you just have, open space or something. You don't know what to do with the building. Well, let's make it co-working space. He says what takes Launch Fishers and separates that from just any co-working space, not that there are that many bad ones, but separates you from the field is the fact that you've provided the kind of leadership that you need to have. So without that leadership, and you've got yourself and a leadership team here that helps all these entrepreneurs, all these people who work in Launch Fisher. So I want to ask you about this whole leadership component of putting a co-working space together and what that means and how you go about doing it.
Well, I would say it starts with the who, really before anything else. And if you look at our team, we are blessed to have an amazing partner in the city of Fishers and Mayor Fadness. This would not have happened the way it's happening without Mayor Fadness specifically on point and in that leadership role. And so I think he and I have a very unique set of circumstances and a relationship where my entrepreneurial experience, I can kind of look out and see pretty good range across the field of experiences of what it takes to build a company like this. On the other side, he sees the political landscape, municipal management, how you integrate something like this into a community, really considering it as 21st century infrastructure. And between the two of us, we have kind of a 180-degree field of view down the line of anything that could come our way. And I don't navigate too far into his world. He doesn't navigate into the entrepreneurial world. And between the two of us, we have a rhythm and a relationship that I think has made it a pretty formidable enterprise. You look today, we have 600 members at Launch Fishers. It is hands down one of the largest operations of its kind. And we view our role as a community asset, right? Our objective when we started this thing was to make entrepreneurship and innovation a dinner table discussion. We thought if we could do that, have third graders that come home and ask a question about entrepreneurship or innovation, get families that watch Shark Tank or, you know, they watch The Prophet, and they actually talk about entrepreneurship and building strong communities through entrepreneurship and innovation. We're 6 years into it, and I think we're starting to see recognition. I quickly here, I'll tell you this. We got a text last night from my niece that lives in California, and she texts this article to my wife, and she said, "Oh my gosh, I'm reading about best places to live in America and best places to raise kids." And she said, number three on the list, this wasn't the Money Magazine, of which we were number one, but this was another ranking of best places in the country to raise a family. And Fishers was on the list. And in the article, they talk about our entrepreneurial culture. They talk about Launch Fishers and a unique perspective from our community about how we value entrepreneurship and innovation. I think long-term, that really begins to change the culture of a community, and that's really what I'm most excited about.
I am amazed at Alan Borf, our local school superintendent. If you follow him on social media, almost 80-90% of his postings have to do with the projects that his students are doing, often in cooperation with Launch Fishers. You and the school system at Launch, he's really integrated some of his students into it, and it appears you have jumped right in there, and you're loving every second of these students being a part of it as well.
Yeah, we literally were exchanging emails last night with one of his team members about the next generation of internship that we want to try to engineer. Right now, we have the Launch Fishers High School Fellowship, of which we've done for a number of years, where we take a couple dozen students, we put them through a boot camp, and we talk about entrepreneurship, innovation, working in an entrepreneurial company. And then we match them up with an innovation company here in the area. Not of them all are even in Fishers. Some are in Indy, some are in Noblesville. They're around the area, so we do think regionally. And what we find is over the summer, these students get a taste of what it's like to work in an entrepreneurial culture. Most of them that experience it, it's transformative. Because everybody understands, you know, doctor or lawyer career path, but they don't understand entrepreneur. We're trying to demystify this career path of what it means to become an entrepreneur.
And Dr. Borf has told me more than once that what amazes him about that program you just described, how many students go in thinking their career is going to go one way. Once they finish that program, they have a whole different idea of where they want to go with their lives. And that's transformative.
It really is. And we have letters. I mean, I've received written letters. I've received emails, a lot of anecdotal information that suggests that this is making a difference in the career trajectory of a lot of these kids. The school corporation and our partnership is an incredible part of the Launch Fishers story, and we're just so thankful to have a community that is behind this thing across the board. I mean, there's really – it's kind of hard to not be into this party, right? When you look at it, it's like, you know what, you don't like the balloons? You don't like the – you know, I mean, this is a really good thing for our community, and we're building a very strong Fishers with entrepreneurship and innovation at its core.
I've covered Fishers now for about 6 years. I started in January of 2012, and I do recall it was the town council, and it wasn't long after I started covering the town. And remember, we were a smaller place then, when there was a proposal on the table to spend, I don't know, was it $200,000-$300,000 to remodel the basement of the library, to bring in this place, and they called it Launch Fishers, and I had no idea what it was. I started asking around. I thought, okay, that sounds interesting. And look what it's become today. That small seed amount of money that the town put in and then continued to support it, and the city and then the mayor continued to support it. I'm setting up this question because I just found out a few weeks ago that Scott Fadness does plan to run for at least one more term as mayor of Fishers. When you hear that, and assuming he does win re-election, the voters decide to keep him here, where do you think you're going, the two of you plan to go? I mean, you've gone places nobody ever expected this city of Fishers to go and Launch Fishers to go. Without giving away too much, just maybe in a vision sense, where do you think the two of you plan to go?
Well, the thing that I think, and I can't really speak for the mayor, I can tell you what I believe, as you know, our focus is on being the best that we can be today. And whether that's in serving in this role, I will tell you, we host mayors from communities around the state routinely. We have had, and we keep a list, so I could name them by name, 48 different communities have come here with mayors and or councils or town managers, but official delegations, sometimes as many as 20, will come through here, and we share everything with them. We believe that the rising tide lifts all ships at the end of the day. And so we are not afraid to share our recipe with any mayor, any community throughout the state. To the extent that we can continue doing that in our current capacity, that's great. If it ends up down the road that there's some other way that we can fulfill that mission, I think he and I are committed to this idea that entrepreneurship and innovation can build a strong community. That community can be, you know, anything. It can be a whole bunch of small towns across Indiana. It might be a just making the state stronger by helping each of these communities.
Any final thoughts as we wrap this up today?
We have another hour or two. You know, I'll tell you, we're...
I try to keep, and this is just for people's information, I try to keep the podcast about the same amount of time as the normal jog. Therefore, you can listen to it from beginning to end, maybe if you're at work and new to projects. I try not to make them too long. Understood. We could talk for a couple hours, couldn't
we? Yeah, I'm really passionate about this and just thankful to have this entire ecosystem the way it sits today. I mean, you look at our city, you look at the schools, you look at our community, whether it's Conner Prairie, whether it's the people that write and talk about us like you, we have received such overwhelming support that is lift, right? That's stuff that helps us continue doing what we're doing. And so I just want to make sure that I'd be remiss if I didn't express my gratitude to this community for accepting us, embracing us, and really encouraging us to do what we do. And we just love doing it. So appreciate that. Thank you for what you do, Larry.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, John. I think, you know, watching you grow this thing from this little enterprise at the basement of the library that grew into this huge building you have today's. Oh, I want to ask you one more thing. I see construction as I drive in, and there's going to be an integration of your campus with the old Charles Schwab building. It'll have a new name, so you'll know it as something else, but it's under construction. Just give me one, about a minute or so, about what that's all going to end up being in a campus setting here.
Absolutely. So the name, the project is called The Visionary, and the first of the Visionary buildings is that remodel. They're taking the former Schwab call center from 113,000 square feet down to about 85,000. They basically cut the center part of that building out and left an open courtyard to it so that all of the suites in that building, almost every one of them will have floor-to-ceiling glass facing the interior courtyard. It is a remarkable vision with the team. CityMark is the developer. The project is about half leased right now with line of sight on the remaining companies. Almost all of them are tech and innovation driven enterprises, but that will serve as the basis for the project. There will be multiple other visionary buildings that will be more of build to suit on this campus. But when it's all said and done, it looks like it's going to be about 200 to 250,000 square feet of tech and innovation space right here in the technology park here in Fishers.
And what I'm hearing is that if it hadn't been for Launch Fishers, that growth probably would not have happened.
I think it was definitely a catalyst for that, along with Steve Cage and his investment in this campus. He now owns several buildings and is assembling what will be known as the Cage Campus in this tech park. So we're going to see, we're going to have some very strong partners on the real estate side back here. And I think that just is a nice signal for what lies ahead.
John Wexler, the founder of Launch Fishers, heavily involved in the Internet of Things Lab in Fishers that's opening up in March. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
My thanks to John Wexler for taking time out of his busy day to talk with me. The IoT lab in Fishers is getting a lot of attention, and John Wexler is one of the major players in making it happen. Here's a quick reminder. Adam Austin and I host a weekly film podcast. It's called Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. You'll find new episodes each Saturday. You can find it at my news blog site, LarryInFishers.com. This is the Larry and Fishers Podcast. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the local news blog, LarryInFishers.com, from Fishers, Indiana, a suburban community northeast of Indianapolis. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.